Welcome to Morgan Lewis Podcast Central. This is a podcast recording from Morgan Lewis's May 1st, 2014 7th Annual Conference, Advanced Topics in Hedge Fund Practices. Morgan Lewis partners Jed Wider and Timothy Levin chaired this 12-part in-depth discussion of U.S. and international advanced hedge fund topics focusing on manager and investor perspectives. Part 10. Richard Zarin will discuss important FATCA registration, compliance, and other key issues. Now, on to the podcast.
On FATCA, I think many of you have been hearing about this for years and years and years as something that was down the road, in a few years, over the horizon, delayed again. And now we're actually at a point, unless Treasury blinks, that as of July 1, 2014, we'll start having this regime. First off, FATCA, Foreign Account Tax Compliance Act, is at least the acronym for it. It actually ended up being put in a different piece of legislation with the acronym the HIRE Act, but that's FATCA is how people refer to it. And the goal of FATCA originally and remains was to get foreign financial institutions, financial intermediaries, people like hedge funds, to feel an economic compulsion to provide to the U.S. information as to whether they had indirect ownership or direct ownership in the form of U.S. people who were hiding their money abroad. That was the theory. And the thought was, we'll do that by imposing on those financial institutions, and sometimes non-financial institutions as well, but imposing 30% withholding in several stages that they otherwise wouldn't be subject to. The first stage, starting July 1, would be on U.S. source income of the sort people on the tax side tend to refer to as FDAP income, things like dividends, interest, rent, royalties, that sort of thing from investments, but without the exceptions that otherwise funds and others can rely on. So thus, we have a broad portfolio interest exception in U.S. tax law so that most interest income otherwise is not subject to 30% withholding so long as a foreign person just provides documentation saying, I'm non-U.S. That won't help you with FATCA. For dividends, many non-U.S. investors directly or through funds might be able to rely on tax treaties to reduce the withholding rate. That won't help you with FATCA. But the goal behind it was really that FATCA wasn't supposed to be withholding that was going to turn into dollars for the U.S. government. Instead, it was supposed to result in revealing all this U.S. money hiding abroad and thus raise taxes that way. In terms of whether that will accomplish that goal versus just putting on the banks, brokerage houses, funds, and others a large administrative burden, and at the end of that doesn't really reveal anything in the way of U.S. people hiding abroad is an open question, or maybe one I think most of us think it's very likely that there will be a massive amount of administrative effort for virtually no payback. One thing I'll note is there's now a new wing of what FATCA seems to be, which is a diplomatic weapon. Senators McCain and Levin the other day sent a letter to Treasury saying, gee, with Russia, make sure you don't move those negotiations of an intergovernmental agreement with Russia forward. This way, combined with at least the general understanding that for many Russian institutions, it would be illegal to enter into an FFI agreement, we'll cover briefly in a moment, with the U.S., would mean that come July 1, Russian financial institutions are potentially subject to broad-based 30% withholding on the sort of interest and dividends. I also will mention that come 2017, the withholding becomes even broader. It picks up gross proceeds from the sale of various U.S. investments, whether or not you made money on them, and can pick up foreign source investment income as well, depending on when they issue regulations and how that will work. That's still somewhat up in the air. I also will say that on the July 1 date, Treasury and the Commissioner of the IRS, they've all been very consistent in saying no more extensions. There have been a long string of very prominent financial institutions sending letters to the government saying this isn't ready. It's not because we're not trying. It's because you haven't given us enough time or guidance. the message to have in mind here is that many counterparties, many prime brokers come July 1 will be looking and saying, if I can't be very comfortable that you're compliant, these rules are complicated, I'm just going to start 30% withholding. You should just assume, I think, for most funds that they just are foreign financial institutions if they're organized outside the US or FFIs and that they're subject to FATCA. There's special cases. There can be family offices that have the look of a fund but really aren't at all within the family money, and you can get into discussions as to whether it's professionally managed or not that may not fit the definition. There may be some other exemptions, but very many of them do. The approach we are suggesting with this at this stage is going onto the IRS website and registering your non-US entities to get what's known as a GIIN number and to fill out the right little boxes to give the government a notion of why and what box you fit in. And that allows you to comply with FATCA by providing information to that local government. Or are you organized in a place like the Netherlands, Antilles, Singapore, Hong Kong, China, Russia, where there is no such thing? Then you can go at this in a different way, where you're, in theory, what you're supposed to do in registering, you're checking a box off and you are entering into a contractual agreement with the US government. It's called an FFI agreement. But if you don't do something where you get this GIIN number, what will happen is that between May 5th and June 2nd, the government will put together and post online a list. Every month thereafter, they'll revise that list. People will be able to look on the list and say, do I see you there? Do I see your number? And at least some counterparties may well look and say, well, I don't see you on this list. You look like a fund that should be there. Give me paperwork or else maybe not. Maybe I'll just withhold and let you deal with it. And that's the concern. That's the concern, even though literally looking at the way the rules are written and the government's guidance, and this is quite plain, for people in jurisdictions with these intergovernmental agreements like the Cayman Islands, they are not required to get this GIIN number before the end of 2014. They're supposed to be able to avoid the withholding simply by filling out a form saying that they're going to be under that intergovernmental agreement. But we've gotten, and other people have as well, a fair number of reports of counterparties who say, we just don't want to deal with it. So that's where those thoughts come from. I'll pause over the intergovernmental agreements for a moment as well. Originally, when the FATCA rules were, the statute was enacted, I think that the intergovernmental agreements weren't in the statute. It wasn't a concept. The thought was going to be that all these non-US financial institutions were going to enter into an agreement with the US Treasury. They were going to say, give the US government directly information about their US investors, and that's how it would work. In practice, that just didn't work. There are many jurisdictions where doing that might well be illegal. In addition, there are many jurisdictions where people just said, I don't want to do that, and can't we come up with another way? And then one by one, we ended up with these intergovernmental agreements, or IGAs. There are basically two forms of them, a Model 1 and a Model 2. And the intergovernmental agreements would serve as a way for people to deal, particularly under the Model 1 version, which is the prevalent one, with their local government instead and not have to enter directly into an agreement with the IRS. And that's become, instead of an idea that wasn't even there, the prevalent method for complying with FATCA. There are interesting exceptions to countries that have negotiated those IGAs. I mean, right now where we stand is there's, 26 countries or something that have entered into and signed IGAs, and there's an equal number that have come to concluding negotiations, and the IRS has issued a list saying you can deem that they've effectively entered into these agreements. But there are some fairly significant exceptions. Some of them are there for political reasons. As I mentioned, Russia is one example where the negotiations really stalled a while back and now they've just stopped altogether. Another one would be Hong Kong, which had been making progress on this, but then that stopped dead because China was unwilling to continue the negotiations, and Hong Kong's independence on this is limited, China as well. Then there are other places that are somewhat more surprising in a way to me. I mean, places like Singapore, where there isn't a particular geopolitical issue. Netherlands, Antilles, Cyprus is less of a surprise. Again, that comes back to Russia, and that's an awful lot of money comes that way. But for those countries and for institutions coming from those countries, things are getting pretty awkward. Among other things, there's a concept of expanded affiliated group. And the concept is basically, if you have a bunch of foreign financial institutions that are more than 50% commonly owned, the theory is, and again, this wasn't really in the original statute, but it's built by regulation in the way the forms have built up, that all the members of the expanded affiliated group are going to need ultimately to get these GIIN numbers. They're going to need to comply. There's a nearer term way you can have a sponsor get that for the rest of the group. But longer term, what you're going to get into is that if you're sitting there with an interrelated group of companies that are foreign financial institutions, and they include somebody in a jurisdiction that doesn't have an IGA and does have legal prohibitions on entering into an agreement with the U.S., this FFI agreement, you're going to find that you're going to have a very sticky situation where, at least a year or two from now, you're not going to be able to be compliant with FATCA for any of the entities in that group because one of them happens to be in Russia or wherever it might be where the rules stand in the way. There are choices with those expanded affiliated groups or EAGs in terms of you pick out a member of the group, they register first, they list everybody else in the group, then everybody else goes online and registers as well. The sponsor approach, which is only available for the shorter run before 2016, allows you to delay all that and just pick one entity in the group to register, and everybody else is listed, but they're not quite registered. Then each entity needs to figure out its category. The process here, which many of you have probably gone through already, requires you to look quite carefully at your structure chart and your entities and figure out how to label each one. So you may have something sitting there that is really, you can argue, not a financial institution at all. It's a family office type entity. You may have another entity in there that is a disregarded entity or branch for U.S. tax purposes and really doesn't need to separately register but needs to be listed somewhere. You may have another entity in there that is organized in Cayman. It can register as a Model 1 IGA jurisdiction, FFI, and that's how it handles itself. Then you have another entity that's organized someplace like Curacao where there isn't an agreement like that. They need to enter into an FFI agreement. And so you need to plan this all out in order to comply. And unfortunately, it's a tedious task. The other thing you need to do with all this is you need to figure out who is going to be the victim on all this, who's going to be the responsible officer, who is going to figure out how you're complying and be prepared to be responsible effectively to the U.S., for the withholding being done in some at least responsible way. It's possible to do that with a third party. It's possible to do that with an internal officer. If it's a third party, you're going to need to make them effectively a local law officer, given local law authority. You're going to need to go through with the local laws of whatever jurisdiction, Guernsey, Cayman, whatever you're dealing with, and confirm, in fact, the procedure for how you do that, and then figure out how, in practice, you're going to do the diligence and figuring out who your owners are and what you're getting from them. Your own fund documents, presumably most of you have already revised, but in the subscription documents, in the placement memo, in the questionnaires, the expectation is from investors to be asking them both for information to confirm who they are and who's behind them, and also that if they don't comply, they don't provide that, that they're going to be the ones bearing the cost and responsibility of withholding and the possibility that you're going to have to throw them out of the fund rather than it being an investor issue. So there are just layers of issues to work through, and they're unfortunately at this point not going away. There also are a succession of new forms to deal with. These forms have been appearing after long delays in the last month or two, or in some cases like the W8 IMY in a new version in the last day or two. The forms are detailed and confusing and lack instructions, which is really sort of remarkable. The government came out with a W-8-B-E-N-E for entity form. They put a February date on it. They came out with it at the end of March, which leaves you also wondering, in theory, the form doesn't have to go into effect for 6 months from the date it's issued, so who knows what that is. But it's, you know, whatever, 10 pages, no instructions, and yet at this point, if you were to go on the IRS website and look for the old W-8-BEN that people have used for a long time for any sort of non-U.S. entity, you will see that it now only applies in its current form to a non-U.S. individual. So you can't even use the form with the instructions. The same thing with W-8-IMY that just came out, which no instructions. It's a long form, lots of boxes to figure out. It's all supposed to figure out how you're FATCA compliant. All the extra pages are all about FATCA. And the old form is no longer in place. Same for all the other forms you routinely deal with. In theory, you can use the old forms through 2016. In theory, they're still good. The question is, where does theory and fact differ? Because will prime brokers, will counterparties be willing not to withhold and take the risk that the IRS won't take a sort of good faith effort approach, but will instead say, why didn't you withhold? You're responsible. That's the question. On that set of cheery thoughts, does anybody have any questions? Yes? For a U.S. public pension plan, all you really need to do at your end is provide the W-9, and that will work fine. The issue you run into is, are you investing? This goes back to some of the fund of one themes you were hearing, but even a little beyond. Are you investing in a fund with other people who aren't complying, and will there be withholding imposed, particularly if it's a non-U.S. fund you're coming into? Will the fund itself be subject to withholding? And then you have to sort out with the fund and hope they're able to do it correctly so that none of that is your problem. With your fund of one issues with that, you know, if you set up a fund of one with a non-U.S. entity, you can sometimes get sort of strange issues because you own more than 50% of that entity. You know, are there suddenly other entities in what you would have thought of as the manager's group that are suddenly sort of part of your group? Are people going to be asking? This is more of an issue for the non-U.S. pension plans, but you may get some people worry about some pretty strange results that way, where you suddenly you're being asked questions about something you didn't know you had anything to do with. Oh, yes. Well, the recalcitrant investor concept that you're going to throw people out of the fund and that's what you're supposed to do. For instance, in the Model 1 IGAs generally, at least within the four corners of the agreements, it's not in there that you have to throw people out. What we don't know in Cayman and other places is we don't have implementing regulations. So we don't know in practice what's going to happen. But right now, there's that real difference. Whereas if you're in a jurisdiction where there isn't an IGA and you have an investor who's just not giving you the information, you're really going to have to throw them out. Now, in practice, are you going to throw them out? At some point, you probably will anyway, because it's just not worth the headache.
Well, you know, so you still got to report the 8966. And when you say throw them out, do you give them the money back or do you hold something?
That's an interesting question, too, and it's a contractual question. I think what you'd want to be doing is in your fund documents making it clear that, and this is tough for a long-standing fund versus a new investor or a newer fund or whatever, that if there is a withholding issue that comes up, even though they're gone, but it went back in time, you get chased because you didn't withhold in the past or somebody else is chased down the chain, that you're somehow going to go after them. Now, real world, are you ever going to get that money? You're not. They're gone. But that's a question. And I think that goes back into a question whether under your fund documents you have any flexibility to hold back some money. Yes?
How does the Treasury intend to police whether the FFIs have done appropriate due diligence to dig out
the question of how they're going to police this is very interesting. I guess there are two layers of that. One would be the participating FFIs, the one entering into the FFI agreements with the U.S. because they're not relying on an IGA. My guess and expectation is that the process will start to look like what they've done with the broker-dealers in recent years, where they went from very little supervision to now going in, reviewing, doing audits, reviewing the paperwork, look on the FDAP, on the regular 30% withholding. Some of the things you hear back from the prime brokers in recent years, and this are sort of crazy, it's like, you know, W-8BNs and before the FATCA world getting rejected because the form said UK or England instead of United Kingdom. They say, oh, there's no such country. So there may be some of that very nitpicky thing going on. When you get to the IGA countries, again, in theory, there are rights that the US would have to sort of go back and look based under the IGAs or also rights to try to get the local authorities to look. I think that's all to come to see how that's all going to work out.
So it's all theoretical right now.
Right now it's all
theoretical.
They
really don't have any idea how they're going to
No idea. The only idea I have is by analogy to what they've done elsewhere. But that's right. So there's frankly on a lot of this. There's a lot of speculation and a lot of remaining fog. Oh, yes.
Reciprocity from?
I'm not sure this is what you're getting at, but on reciprocity, there's, you know, the UK came and entered into an IGA. The UK is thinking about that for elsewhere. There is a policy paper among the OECD countries about other countries doing the same thing. It does seem like this may become like the US controlled foreign corporation idea from decades ago, where it makes for extremely confusing conversations when you get into this, where there are now CFC concepts in dozens and dozens of different countries. They're all different, but they all got inspired by us. So I'm afraid this may be another export. But yeah, I think there will be more of that happening.
Well, I was thinking more of the, you know, where we said to the UK, report on Americans that have money over there. And where the UK said, you know, America, report to me,
yes,
my people that have that.
Yes, there will. I mean, especially there are Model 1 agreements with treaty partners that include, I believe the UK one does, but certainly most of those include reciprocity sort of provisions. So that is part of the expectation, is that the UK or whoever, I'm pretty sure it's on the UK one, but most of these, they can turn around and ask for that. They already could do some of that through competent authority type of abilities underneath the existing tax treaty, but this gives them another place to go look. Okay.
To listen to other panels from the 2014 7th Annual Advanced Topics in Hedge Fund Practices Conference, visit Podcast Central at morganlewis.com. If you have any questions or would like more information on the topics addressed in this podcast, please contact a Morgan Lewis attorney at morganlewis.com. This podcast is provided as a general informational service to clients and friends of Morgan Lewis & Bockius LLP. It should not be construed as and does not constitute legal advice on any specific matter, nor does this message create an attorney-client relationship. These materials may be considered attorney advertising in some states. Please note that any prior results discussed in the material do not guarantee similar outcomes. Read more about Morgan Lewis and its hedge funds practice at morganlewis.com/hedgefundsresources.